When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
17-14 is the final. One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
Happy Monday, everybody. I am John Schmelk, and welcome to another episode of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com and the Giants mobile app. Joining me today is Paul Dottino. We also partnered on the MSG and YouTube program
today.
I don't think the YouTube one is up quite yet. It should be soon.
After 5 o'clock, usually.
Yes, and then tonight, obviously, check it out on MSG for a Giants training camp report sponsored by Citizen. So you'll get our take on practice, on what happened, with some video with it as well. So that was a lot of fun, Paul.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I commend all the folks who are out here enjoying things. Heat index was over 100 degrees.
Much credit to our crew for setting all that stuff up and everything in this heat.
Tell me about it. And, folks, if you're coming out tomorrow, same thing again. Temperatures in the mid-90s, humidity, heat index is going to be touching 100. So just make sure you bring water, you drink, you towel off, stay in the shade when you can. It's a serious heat wave we're having right now.
The heat definitely hit me today because I am exhausted, like just tired. Like the heat has sucked energy out of me. I got nothing in the tank right now.
You know, this is what training camp was like in the old days.
Yeah.
You know,
except you'd have to go back out in 2 more hours for another practice.
Well, yeah. Parcells sometimes used to run 3 a days, John. Yeah. Folks, just so you understand,
he was
right?
A lunatic.
Well, today, because of the CBA, you get a 2-hour maximum of a fully padded practice. Then you get a maximum hour and a half walkthrough if you want to have a second practice later on in the day. But you can't have pads on and you can't hit. It's strictly a walkthrough. So maximum amount of time that you're allowed to be on the field over the 2 sessions is 2 hours plus 1.5 hours. And only the first 2 hours can be hitting. I mean, when I talk about flag football, compared to the old days, this really is.
It is. So we'll see what happens. Practice today, second straight day in pads, Paul. Tomorrow,
first time.
They will be last week they had padded practices, but they were separated.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be padded practice. There's one yesterday. There's one today. There'll be one tomorrow. Then the players get their day off. I'm sure they'll walk through on Wednesday morning. And then we get on the train and we head up to Providence and do the Patriot game on Thursday night. So we're getting close to that first preseason game.
You know, it's funny, John. Dable was saying to the media just yesterday that the conditioning stuff is pretty much over. By the time we get to Wednesday of this week, training camp will have gone 2 full weeks from the time they opened and reported till the time Wednesday comes around. They will have a combined total of 10 padded practices by the time the final preseason game is played against the Jets on August the 28th. But as we just said a moment ago, this was the first time they had back-to-back fully padded practices. Dable says the conditioning is over. Now it's time to see who can do what.
Well, in fairness, he did have them do extra running in between plays again today.
Oh, he did.
So the conditioning is still being worked on.
Oh, yeah. The emphasis of conditioning, though,
is
gone now through the first week and a half. He's into more evaluations right now. But, yes, you're absolutely right. What I call, it's a new drill that I hadn't seen till Dable started running it this week. And I call it the run and set drill, which is where the offense goes down the field, they get close to the end of a drive, and then he says, okay, guys, we're going to run all the way down to the other end of the field. We're going to quickly set, and we're going to finish the drive on the other end of the field after you've sprinted about 80 yards. So I call it the run and set drill. That's the conditioning that you just alluded to.
Yeah, and the whole point is to try to make these guys execute when the plays, when they're tired, and execute plays when they're exhausted, which happens in the fourth quarter of these games. So that's why they're doing it. There was a little fracas today.
Yes.
Things got a little physical. It started Saquon Barkley kind of ran over Aaron Robinson on a running play. And then there are a couple other physical plays involving
Tay Crowder.
And then
three in a row.
Feliciano got involved, and then it was a little chaotic.
Pushing and shoving. I call it a fracas, feistiness, abrasiveness, if you will. Nothing that was a full-blown WWE battle royal.
You like scrum?
Scrum isn't bad either.
Like scrum?
You know. But not a heavyweight boxing match.
No one got hurt.
Not a steel cage match. Mm-hmm. And again, John, I'm going to show my age. We used to see these things once, twice a week in practice all the time in the old days.
When do you not show your age, by the way?
I know. Every time I look in the mirror, I see it. But the truth of the matter is, this was nothing unusual. In the dog days of August, when these guys are out there and they're hitting and they've got full pads on, there are going to be some short fuses. And from what we were able to ascertain, talking to Ward and Love, two defenders after practice, is, and I'm going to paraphrase what they said, Dable gathered the team together. He had them for about 4 minutes or so after the fracas. Got them up in a circle, and the instructions were as follows. Guys, I love the physicality. I love the energy. That stuff is great. But we need to be careful. We need to make sure we don't get anybody hurt. And by the way, that's it. It's over. It's done. Move on to the next play and focus. And that's what happened. The circle broke up and they finished out the rest of practice with no more incidents. And so as far as we could tell, especially talking to those two defensive players, they followed the directions and there was really not much to do about this. But of course, because there wasn't much about practice anyway, not a lot of huge plays. Not a lot of great stuff went on today. A
couple interceptions.
Yeah.
Nice plays.
Adoree Jackson had a really cool one.
Yeah.
But I think the writers are going to make the fracas their main story.
Well, I mean, they've been writing about practice for 2 weeks.
Right.
If you had a chance, wouldn't you write about something?
Well, there was really nothing else exciting to write about today. It was a very mediocre kind of practice. And quite honestly,
McKinney had the other interception, by the way.
Yeah, the other one, the second one. Mm-hmm. I thought that Jones was up and down today. It was a very mixed bag for him. A
couple rough throws.
Is it fair to say, John?
But he had some good throws too, so.
I think I would say he's had three practices so far in training camp to me where I was like, you know, that's a mixed bag and it's subpar and he's got to be better. This was one of those three for me that I really think he probably wishes he had improved. It was just not a great day for him. But he also did have enough of decent throws and good throws where I think mixed bag is actually the appropriate term to use.
Sure, I agree with that. Colin Johnson had another nice day.
Paul, he did.
He look, you can't teach height. That's our running joke here. But he has... And it's not, he makes contested catches.
Mm-hmm.
He gets separation too on some of these routes. He has run past some cornerbacks on some plays to get down the field. A great diving catch on a ball today, went completely airborne, cradled in, and went down to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just impressing. And, you know, when we did our most critical players who the Giants could least afford to lose this year, and I picked Kenny Golladay, my explanation was, well, I don't really see anyone else that can step in that I feel great about that's that size and can do the things Kenny Golladay does. Now, I'm not saying Colin Johnson is Kenny Golladay. He's not. Kenny Golladay has a long track record of high-level production in the NFL. But if you just, you know...
You're talking about the role.
If you had the two guys swap jerseys and just had them walk onto the practice field, you wouldn't be able to tell them apart.
Well,
I'm not saying watching them play.
Physically, they're very similar.
If you literally had them switch uniforms and walk onto the field, you wouldn't know they had swapped uniforms until you actually start seeing them play. They're very similar physically.
There are two players on the depth chart who fit the role of skyscraper.
Or that traditional X wide receiver that you're
Johnson
looking for.
Johnson and David Sills.
Yes.
They both fit that traditional type of body type. Sills is 6'4".
Is Sills listed at 6'4"?
Well, he is. Whether or not they list him that, I'm telling you, he's 6'4".
They have Sills listed at... Where's Sills here? Let's change his number, right? What is he at now, 13?
Yeah.
6'3".
I think they're cheating him a little.
Why would they make a guy shorter? That's the dumbest thing I ever heard.
But the truth of the matter is...
Short-changing him.
Those are the two skyscrapers on the depth chart. I, I think he's 6'4".
Do I bring a tape measure for you? And you can measure
no,
him
I don't want to do that. I don't want to do
it's
that.
It's like how I'm really 6 feet.
Well, we know Lance isn't. But I would say this. You're right, John. It's the kind of thing where, you know, one of those two guys would have to step up and be that big guy if Galladay were to get hurt. And let's not kid ourselves. Galladay's resume is much more accomplished than either one of those guys.
Of course. Yeah, it's not even close. And I'm going to try to get Colin Johnson for a Giants Huddle. That'll roll tomorrow. That'll be our radio pregame interview as well. So hopefully we'll have a chance to talk to him and we'll get some insight into how camp's going for him. But he's just one of these guys. He doesn't drop passes either.
No.
Like, I don't think he's... Has he dropped a pass all camp long, Colin Johnson?
One.
I remember one.
Okay. I remember one.
Maybe it was early in practice when I still had the COVID. Mm. So I wasn't here for a couple, or at least I had to stand really far away from everybody. But yeah, he's been really consistent with his hands, too.
Look, I remember when he came out of Tennessee, and you'll recall I liked him as like one of my skyscraper guys, a dark horse guy that I had.
Yeah, as an early day three pick, like a kind of a fourth,
fifth rounder.
I
thought he
type.
Was meriting consideration.
I'd have to go back to my notes on what my notes were on him.
He had deceptive speed, okay, because let's face it, he's not very quick, but had deceptive speed, and he was the type of guy who could get open and certainly was very strong with his hands and had the ability to fight guys off in tough areas, make contested catches, had a wide range and radius to catch the ball, a big box, as I like to call it. And, you know, I was disappointed, to be honest, when they didn't. Because at that time, we were talking about the Giants wide receiver core, and you know, I kept crying. They need a skyscraper.
Is that the 2020
goes
draft
back 2020. Yeah, I think 2020.
Right, let me see if I can find my.
And I was crying because they were all short receivers. They had a bunch of Smurfs in there. No skyscrapers. And I was looking for one. And Johnson was a guy that I had my eyes on. Now, at the same time, last year he played, I think, 12 games, had 11 catches for just over 100 yards. All right, he showed some capabilities in cameos. Is that enough to think that he deserves a spot on this 53?
No, that's funny.
I don't necessarily believe that it does, but I like him very much on the practice squad. I'd love to have him as a reserve, as insurance. Yeah.
So I'm just going through my notes here, and it's funny. I just happened to flip to the Kadarius Toney page from 2 years ago.
Did you?
Yes. So this is the notes from this. This is just Senior Bowl only.
Okay.
This is just what I wrote down.
Of Johnson?
No.
Of Toney?
I'm just going to give you Toney, and then I have to try to find Johnson.
Okay.
But Toney, what I just flipped to the page.
Yes.
So Toney, what I wrote down from the Senior Bowl, big play, and keep in mind, we don't know anything about these guys when we get to the Senior Bowl. We're literally learning just what we're watching. Big play wide receiver, can get yards after the catch or win over the top, can make contested catches, strong, plays bigger than his size, late first round, early second round pick. That was my Senior Bowl notes on
and him. I think that was the common thoughts on Toney all along.
So let's see. I guess he was the same year as Daniel Jones then, Colin Johnson?
Oh my God. You know what, John?
Right, hold on. Let me find him. Hold on. Let me see if I have him in here. Oh boy, there are some names in here. Dwayne Haskins.
Oh. You know what? It's hard to go back and look at some of those things because obviously some of them you get right and others you get way wrong.
Deebo Samuel, good yak, elusive, built thick like a running back.
Yeah.
Has second year, good acceleration, let's say.
Yeah.
What else do we got here? All right. DK Metcalf, AJ Brown. Oh, remember Hakeem Butler?
Yes.
Giants almost. I thought the Giants could have picked him in the fourth round, and he has not worked out.
No, not at all.
Let's see. Deontay Johnson.
But I will tell you.
Here's David Sills, if that interests you. Let's see. Nah, I don't. You know, I don't have a write-up on Colin Johnson here. Doesn't look
I'm
like.
I'm surprised.
Yeah.
He was there, wasn't he?
Round 5, pick 165.
In what year?
2020.
It was 2020. I thought so.
Oh, I was looking at 2019. That's why.
Oh, wrong book.
I was looking at 2019. No, it's in the same book. It's just separated by section. Let's see. 2020. All right, so that was the Brandon Ayuk year here. Let me see. Let's see. Pittman.
So anyway.
Yep, go ahead.
So when he was with the Longhorns down at Texas, he showed, and they were not a team, by the way, that necessarily wanted him to make the big play.
Wait, was it Longhorns or
he was Texas? Did I say Tennessee before? Yeah. I misspoke.
Well, I remember. I think I actually got that wrong once when we were talking about him on the air because I remember that he wore orange on his game tape.
Yes,
I didn't remember if it was Tennessee or Texas.
It's not hard. Texas, it's not hard to forget. Correct. I mean, it's easy to forget. I should say.
Yeah,
but he was a guy who, you know, he did some really, really good things when he was there, but he was not necessarily a speed demon or a big play guy. He was more of a medium range receiver. And, you know, part of what I liked about him, John, I figured that he could project to be a hell of a blocker too because of his size. Yeah. He's got length and he's got some strength to him. I don't know what's going to happen here. The Giants will probably keep six. I think we would both agree six, right, on the 53?
Yeah, I mean, you could only go five if you wanted to.
You could. I'm thinking probably six, though.
All right, I can't find my Colin Johnson.
All right, not to worry.
See, this is why one day in the offseason when I have time, I need to take these notes and I need to put them into an Excel. No, seriously, I need to put them into an Excel spreadsheet so I can actually find the damn things when I'm looking for them. I think that would be actually pretty useful if I
But I mean, you know, he averaged 14 yards a catch, which is a nice, good medium range to a little bit higher when he was at Texas. But here's the bottom line, okay? He is having a good offseason.
Yep.
And an offseason that's going to get him noticed by the coaches. Now, whether or not it gets him on the 53, again, I'm inclined to think it won't. But I don't think they're going to want him to leave the building.
All right, so I totally agree with you. All right, let's open the phones, 201-939-4513. I already see we got one person on hold. We'll get to you in just a second. Again, it's 201-939-4513. All right, Paul, we want to talk about what the coordinator said today before we get to our phone calls. Quickly, this was Dable from the weekend. We haven't talked about it on the show yet. He basically said everyone's going to play on Thursday. That's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So how much each guy plays and each starter is dependent on the player, what he needs to see and all that stuff. But he understands, at least right now, that these guys need reps. So they're going to be out there. And this probably tells me, Paul, personally, that assuming they're healthy, we're going to see the real players in all three preseason games. Because I don't think – I'm still of the idea – you cannot afford to not play these guys at all in that final preseason game, because then you're looking at 3 weeks between game action for starters, between the preseason and the regular season. So I think we're going to see guys in all three of these preseason games. To me, if you're going to sit guys out of preseason games, this is the game you sit the guys out of. So my guess is you're going to see him in all three.
I agree with you 1,000%. I think that Dable, I'm very pleased to say.
Oh, I knew you were happy when you heard him say that.
He clearly seems to be leaning towards my philosophy of making sure these guys get their reps and making sure that they have some type of fabric down before they get to the regular season. Look, John, I'm sick of bad Septembers, okay? Let's not kid ourselves anymore. This team has had some horrible Septembers for quite a long time. And one of the reasons that I believe that has been the case is because they have not been properly prepared and not had enough snaps together during the preseason. I've been vocal about this, screaming from the top of the Empire State Building. Some people hate me for it. Other people understand where I'm coming from. I will tell you this, and it probably won't surprise you.
Can I understand you and still hate you at the same time?
Right.
Okay, good.
The alums, the alums who come through here, and you know the Giants have alums doing autographs every single day.
And we'll have Giant Huddles coming up with Stephen Baker and Otis Anderson at some point.
Indeed we will. Every one of these alums that comes through, and I see them, we always talk about the preseason snaps, and they always complain about the flag football training camps and how these guys need to play in the preseason. They all say it. I come from that generation, so what do you expect from me?
The old man echo chamber on the sideline.
There you go.
Yes.
You know, so in any event, yes, that's what Dable has said, and I do expect the guys to play in all three.
All right, coordinators today, I thought a couple things were of note. Wink Martindale talking about the green dot and who it would go on. And basically what I got out of it, Paul, he wants the green dot on the guy that's going to be on the field all the time. And the two guys that are going to be on the field all the time are Xavier McKinney and Julian Love. So those, he said, the McKinney thing is not set in stone. He mentioned Julian Love as a possibility. He said a linebacker could be a possibility. I like the line where he said just because the NFL has done something a certain way forever doesn't mean that's the best way to do it. And I try to, you know, find the best way to do it, even if it's not what people have always done. I think that's a great way to approach football strategy and coaching. So I think we're going to see one of those two safeties with the green dot. He said it could change week to week. It's not impossible. But to me, Wink basically said, look, I want the guy with the dot on the field as much as possible, and that's going to be one of those two safeties, Xavier McKinney or Julian Love, right?
He did mention possibility of a linebacker, too.
Yep. No, he did.
You
I
know.
Just said that. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, you know, John, we've been talking about this now for weeks, that there's going to be a lot of game-by-game, week-by-week tendencies.
Sure.
I think this is an extension of that, right?
The other thing I thought he said that was important, Paul, he said he really likes what he's seen out of the first team defensive backs. So that's McKinney, Love, Holmes, who we call Dirty 30, because he likes to do the physical dirty work in there. Not that he plays dirty, but he likes to do the dirty work. He's a tough guy. And then Robinson and Dory Jackson outside. But he also went out of his way to say, we need to figure out who the guys are going to be behind those starters in terms of backup safeties and cornerbacks. As you all know, it's very difficult to keep those defensive backs with all the running that they do healthy for the entire season. You're going to need a couple probably of corners and at least a third safety, maybe even a fourth, to be able to step in at some point during the year. So really the evaluation process on figuring out who those backups are going to be is really in full force here.
Well, it has to be because, let's face it, the Giants need to know who's going to back up those starters. They feel pretty confident. It's clear that they feel pretty confident in their starting five. And I say five because Darnay Holmes is the slot, is kind of a starter as the fifth guy. They do like what they're seeing, and that's fine. But we all know, and you said it correctly, it's hard to keep all those guys healthy for the entire season. But the other thing is, and this goes back to our week-to-week schematics, there will be times when they're going to use six and maybe even seven defensive backs in a game.
Oh, yeah, it's going to happen. You can have three down linemen and eight defensive backs on a third and long. Like, it's not impossible.
It will not surprise me. With Wink Martindale as the DC, that would not surprise me one bit at all. So they need to know they've got enough guys to play if they want to go to a dramatic page in the playbook.
He talked about Kayvon Thibodeaux, how he's gone to work every day, smart player, has really applied himself.
Mm-hmm.
Those are most of the things from Wink. Let's see what we got from Kafka here. He was stepped up first to the podium. Talked about the calling plays process is collaborative. You'll have a chance to do it on Thursday. Still no decision on what's going to happen when they get to the regular season.
Like that, by the way, John.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in favor of Kafka calling plays all along.
Yeah,
and it does sound like it's kind of nudging in that direction.
I was on the other side. I didn't think it was going to happen. I would be less surprised if it happened now than I would have been 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree.
I'm not saying I'm leaning in that direction, but I've tilted. Tilted slightly. Little tilt.
Teetered.
The other thing he said, over the last 7 to 10 days, he thought the communication between the wide receivers and the quarterbacks has really improved, and that's kind of shown itself in the practice field. Understanding, well, if I show you this body language, I'm going to do that. If I see this, I'm going to do that. So it seems like that's starting to come together a little bit with the wide receivers and the quarterbacks.
You mentioned something today to me and asked me to expand on it on the MSG show that'll be on later on tonight about Golladay. And you said recently he's had some of his best practices with Daniel Jones.
I think since he's been a Giant, absolutely.
Totally concur. And I believe that Golladay staying here during the offseason and working on his own with Jones, throwing passes, throwing routes, getting some type of chemistry together.
You can tell he doesn't like the perception of him from his last two seasons.
No. And he was ultra-focused this offseason to try to change that narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And his work during the offseason with Daniel Jones appears to start. It looks like it's starting to pay off. It really does.
Agreed. Anything else you want to touch on from media today? Anything with the players that I maybe missed?
No, I think the only thing that I would add is that listening to Bellinger, and you guys know Ricky Seals-Jones is still not out of practice. He's dealing with a malady.
We don't have anything on what his deal is, right? What's wrong with him?
Well, nothing we can say.
Well, they haven't announced it yet, right?
Right. But he is dealing with some type of injury. And so that's really opened up a lot of reps for the tight ends. Now, Bellinger's been getting more and more of those. We know that Charlie's guy, Miller, got dinged up the other day. So he's losing some reps.
There's our boy Sean O'Hara in Detroit, by the way.
How about that, yeah. Sean? So Bellinger's getting more reps the last 2 days.
Yeah.
And he had a drop today that I wasn't very happy about. But
I'm sure you had a firm talking to with him after practice.
No. I think I'll excuse him for this one. But I see a guy who is very eager. He seems to be very much, what's the word I'm looking for? Attentive.
Yes.
Even on his blocking plays.
No, yeah.
I mean, if you watch him, John.
No, he's very serious about this.
He's getting into it. It's not like one of these tight ends who wants to be on ESPN every weekend, who you could tell he's running his routes crisply, but now when it comes time to a blocking, he's going to dog it. That's not the case. He's out there and he's given his all every time he's out there. So I'm impressed with Bellinger. But again, during the whole offseason, I've been saying good things about him.
Help me out here. Did O'Hara overlap with Dan Campbell at all, Paul, with the Giants?
I don't believe he did.
I don't think they did, right?
No.
They probably missed each other by a couple years.
Yes.
What was Campbell's last year? Like 2003?
Oh, my goodness. Campbell's last year.
Did he make it to Coughlin, Dan Campbell?
I just remember when he left and went to Dallas. I want to say 2002.
Let me see. Pro Football Reference.
What do you got?
Dan Campbell. Last year with Dallas, last year with the Giants was 2002.
Yeah.
You're right.
He left to go to Dallas as a free agent. They didn't have the money to pay him.
And O'Hara's first year with the Giants was 2004, so they missed each other by 2 years.
A couple of years, that's what I thought. Like Dan Campbell a lot. He was a real workhorse. You know, it's funny, they've had a few of those guys here over the years, whether it be Boss, Dan Campbell.
Jake Ballard.
That's a good one. All of those guys were cut out of a similar cloth.
Bear Pascal.
Yeah.
Swing Dancer. You remember that?
Cowboy.
Yeah, at the 2011 Super Bowl celebration, he goes on the dance floor with his wife. He's flinging her around like he's like, it was unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
That's what they call a 10-gallon hat. They call that?
He was wearing the 10-gallon hat.
I know.
I love Bear. Bear was just a great, great dude. He was awesome.
So,
all right, so let's get to the calls here. We got three people on hold. Let's get to you at 201-939-4513. But don't forget, the season's coming, folks. So season tickets are still on sale now for the 2022 season. Get your tickets in addition to the savings you get. Membership benefits include access to exclusive events, experiences, pre-sales, and more. You can lock in your seats starting at just $100. Call 888-NYG-1925 or visit giants.com/tickets for more information. And for the one training camp practice left open to the public, Paul, two? Is it just one?
The last public practice is the 14th.
14th. So we got a couple more still to go.
Yeah.
Now. So if you guys want to come out to practice, go to giants.com. There are still tickets available for practices as well. I think the weekends are all sold out, but you should be able to score some tickets for weekdays if you go on there. Who knows? Maybe people will return tickets for the weekend practice.
That could happen, too.
You can go check it out. All right, let's go to the phones. Tim in Charleston has finally found us after many emails of not being able to. Tim, how are you?
yeah. So on that, John, I appreciate your help. I got you through the website today. But is it gone from the app now? From now on?
No, there are the same top people that solve the streaming issue are now working on the app issue. So hopefully sooner rather than later we'll be back up on the app. Unfortunately, I think they have to check out the Ark of the Covenant inside that big crate first, and then they'll go work on the app after that.
I appreciate
it. Yeah, no problem.
That's the way I always found you, and I had trouble with the website. But anyway,
yeah.
So I got one simple thing. And, first I just wanted to say, like what you guys were talking about before, about playing the starters in the preseason and getting them some reps in all three games. Paul agrees with you, John, 1,000%. I agree with Paul 1,000%, so I guess that means I agree with you 1,000,000%. But
I like the math.
After that math exercise, what I wanted to say is a key on offense and defense for me. And I'll start with the defense. In the defense, obviously – the way Wink plays defense, the pass rush, putting pressure on the quarterback, making him change what he wants to do is paramount, and that puts pressure on the secondary. So the secondary is going to make some plays, and they're going to get beat sometimes. So I think it comes down to, and I think Wink said this, and I think it comes down to one thing on defense that will be the fulcrum point, which is stopping the run. If they stop the run, it'll get some in longer second and longer third downs, allows the pass rush to be more effective, and I think it just goes from there. Likewise, on offense, for all the playmakers we have and all these, the Tonys and the Robinsons and Barkley and everything else, and obviously that's real important, but if we can't run the ball, it's not going to matter. So I think, again, and it goes so old school, but so I'm sure Paul will agree. I think it comes down on both sides of the ball to being able to run it and to being able to stop the run. So
it's always in the trenches, my man.
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate the call, bud.
It's always about the trenches. But John, when you employ a high risk, high reward defense like what Wink is going to do here, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. That's the way it's going to go. You have to gain respect with your rush defense first.
Well, yeah, but you have to get into those third and longs to do your crazy stuff. You have no choice.
The minute that you allow another team to run the ball against you, that opens up their playbook, and now allows them to take advantage of all of your risk taking on defense.
Let me attack that from two different angles. Our Giants Huddle podcast, is that Jerry Jones popping up on NFL Network? Said he just showed up. That's unbelievable. imagine covering practices down there. It must just be like, who knows what could happen any day you're down there. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
Guarantee John Mara's not going to do that with NFL Network.
No.
Where I was going, I got completely distracted.
We were talking about running the ball.
Oh, yes, and Wing Martindale's defense. So
yes.
On the John Settle podcast last Wednesday, I did an interview with Eric Eager, who's basically runs Pro Football Focus's research and analytics department. And
okay.
The way he described it to me, and I never heard it quite this way, but when I thought about it, I thought it was, all right, this is actually pretty smart. When you play a lot of man-to-man defense, you exacerbate the difference in the talent levels between the two teams.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're really good and you play a lot of man-to-man, you're going to make your opponent look worse, especially if they're not very good.
Right.
But if you're at a talent deficiency and you run a lot of man-to-man and the other group's better than you,
you pay.
It's going to look bad. So I thought that was a great way to kind of just put it into words, mm-hmm. the impact of playing a lot of man-to-man defense. So I agree with you, and I will say this. I have all the confidence in the world that Leonard Williams and Dexter Lawrence and Blake Martinez are going to be fine. I'm not as quite as confident about the edges. So I think your run defense up the middle is going to be okay, but I want to see more along the edges. And I think when I've seen this Giants offense in 9 and 7s and stuff pop something, it's when the play starts in the middle and then it cuts over at the tackle,
right.
Cuts outside the guard.
That's fair.
So that's kind of what my focus is on here in terms of the run defense. Look, Blake's going to be he's a good middle linebacker. He's good against the run. He's good. Dexter and Leonard are good. We know they're good players, and we mm-hmm. know that's what they're good at.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's going to be an issue with the run defense, and I don't think there will be. I think they'll be fine. But I would keep an eye on the stuff that goes outside the guards, off tackle, outside the tackle, and see how the cornerbacks tackle. Now, Holmes is a pretty aggressive tackler. So is Aaron Robinson. I don't think that's going to be a problem. Adoree's willing to do stuff out there. So I think they'll be fine. But that, to me, is more of a question than the right up the gut stuff with 97 and 99 and 54.
I think that's very fair, John. And a couple of reasons why you have to continue to think along those lines. Number one, the Giants' edge rushers, outside of Thibodeau, they're not the strongest guys.
Yeah, Aziz Ojulari is not a huge guy. He's not huge.
Ellison Smith needs to add power. O'Shane Zimenez needs to add power.
Smith has the frame for it, though.
Got the frame,
Smith,
but he
certainly has a bigger frame than Zimenez.
But
he's 6'7", 245.
No question,
yeah.
But he needs to add more power. The power quotient is not where I want it to be yet.
Well, when you're tall, 2'6", 7", that's a leverage deal, and then have to be even stronger to make up for that lack
mm-hmm.
of leverage.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I look at these guys and I say to myself, okay, they don't have, for example, Carl Banks had a high power quotient.
Mm-hmm.
All right. He wasn't the most gigantic, humongous strong side linebacker, but he was very, very strong and powerful and stout for his size. And that's why he was able to anchor and hold down the position that he was. I don't think the Giants edge guys, as many as they, I mean, Cam Brown is a very athletic linebacker.
Sure.
He's got length. He doesn't have a lot of power compared to other guys in the league that we talk about.
Yeah, he's only 233, yeah.
The power quotient's not there, John.
I'll be honest with you.
And it's just not.
I didn't realize he was listed this heavy. Just looking at him, Thibodeau doesn't look 258 to me.
Oh, because he's put together very well.
Like, Darian Beavers looks 258
yes.
to
yes.
me. Like,
I agree.
He's much, like, the one thing people, and it's funny, and now I've gotten a chance to really look at him up close since training camps mm-hmm. are and everything. The one thing people talked about Thibodeau, he's a little narrow-hipped and he's a narrow base.
Mm-hmm.
Very true.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a thick...
Not at all.
Thick trunk, thick lower body. Like, he doesn't have that. You know what I mean?
I agree.
Which is fine. You don't have to. There's not like that's some, you know, debilitating, you know, deficiency or whatever. But that is true. He's not... He's built well. Like you said, he's tall. He's upper body proportional. But he doesn't have the, you know, that thick lower portion where, you know, you kind of, you know, are strong down low.
Mm-hmm. Which is why Beavers is such an intriguing prospect to me, because now they've been running him a lot inside the last couple of practices, and he's performed very well. But Beavers is a more physically imposing guy when you look at him, and the Giants have talked about maybe using him on the outside because he did do some of that at Cincinnati when he was in college. I wonder how much that may come into play on early downs against the run.
Yeah, sure.
Because he can be stout in that regard. But the other thing I was going to say in terms of the whole power quotient thing, that's where Wink has to be very careful with his schematics. Because one of the things that he wants to do, he's going to send slot blitzes, corner blitzes, safety blitzes. He's sneaking those guys up into gaps.
Julian Love's up there all the time.
Okay. Now, honestly, John, if a team understands that they're going to be able to pound on your smaller guys who are coming on blitzes and they can't slither through and they're not quick enough to get home, all of a sudden teams say to themselves, all right, you're going to start sending these guys? Guess what? We're going to go heavy. We're going to go with one of our jumbo packages or our monster packages or one of our heavy packages. And we're going to sic a fullback onto your blitzing corner. Or we're going to make sure that we're going to pick up that corner blitz with a tight end. And all of a sudden now, if you get too fancy with all these smaller guys in the back seven coming on blitzes, you're setting yourself up for getting muscled around.
Yeah. Sure.
Because teams will then decide they're going to get into a slugfest with you, and they will push you off the field.
So I just wrote it down, and I put it on the wall. I got a bold prediction for you.
Yes.
Julian Love gets a contract extension before the regular season's over. I put it on the wall. That is my bold prediction for the season.
I think it's reasonable.
Really seemed to love him when he talked about
yes,
him.
Yes, he did. Now, what I don't know is, how does Joe Shane feel about doing deals in midseason?
I don't know. It's a good question. And I go back how they locked up those two safeties in Buffalo a long time.
They did.
That's kind of
they
why
did.
I'm making that prediction.
They did.
So, anyway. 201-939-4513. Stas in Washington. We haven't talked to Stas in a while.
Oh,
what's
goodness.
Up, buddy?
Yeah. Hello.
Hey, what's up, guys? How's everyone doing?
We're good, dude. How are you?
I'm good, John. How's your baby doing, man?
He was fantastic. Had his 3-month checkup today. Checked in at 13 pounds and 9 ounces, so he is doing well.
That's awesome. It's good to hear. Did you guys say there's only two more practices that the fans can visit?
It's a good question. I can actually get that exact number for you right now, Stas.
The last date is the 14th. That I can tell you for sure. Now, there'll be one tomorrow.
Oh. Training camp schedule. Here we go. Two more, yeah. Tuesday, August 9th, and Sunday, August 14th, and
okay.
That's it. Yep,
yeah.
Two more.
Well, I'm going to tell you, thank God for that, because the amount of fans of the Giants that are all of a sudden they're shaman priests and they have PhDs in kinesis is driving me crazy. Everybody's like, well, did you notice how he rubbed his nose when they asked about Daniel Jones? What that really means is that the lunar eclipse is going to... I'm just like, shut up. No one knows anything, guys. Let's just watch some football.
You know, Stas.
Preseason is here.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just...
Cell phones and the ability of cell phones to take pictures and video has made an amateur analysis or analyst out of so many people who should not even enter those waters. Let's put it that way.
The worst part about that is that none of them believe that they're amateurs. That's the worst part about it.
How true.
Stas, the one thing, if I could wave a magic wand and change one thing about the people in general, it would be for people to understand and be self-aware of what they don't know and don't understand.
I say it all the time.
There are way too many people. And by the way, I'm guilty of this sometimes too. Paul's guilty of this sometimes too. We
it
all
can
are.
Happen,
happens.
All of us.
You have to understand there are things, a lot of things on this planet that you're not an expert in. And, you know, just trying to draw a lot of conclusions out of things that you don't necessarily know everything that you're looking at. I say that all the time on the show. I'm like, look, guys, I'm looking at this. I don't know what the play call is. I don't know if this is the receiver's fault, the quarterback's fault. I don't know. Like, it's okay to say, I don't know. And I have to ask somebody and find out, because there are some things we just don't know.
Stas, I said this many years ago. And the smartest people in the world know what they don't know.
Know what they
and
don't
if,
know. Thank
and
you.
If you think about that statement,
that was a phrase I was looking for.
It's,
thank you.
You know, I mean, well, I copyrighted that like 25 years ago. It's one of my favorite phrases in life, and I tell people all the time, know what you don't know, then you'll be a smart guy.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I absolutely agree with it. You know, I think, like, listen, we're all football fans. We watch enough football to say we know certain things. But to sit down and try to give an analysis of what we're seeing at training camp and you don't know what the purpose of the practice was, what in, if there's a new install, if they're being asked to do something different, if and you don't know any of these, it just gets so annoying. Like, some of these Twitter spaces, I've literally just stopped getting on them because they're so obnoxious.
Stas, you're going to love this. You're going to love this. I'll let you finish, but you're going to love this. Just yesterday, John Feliciano got up at the media session and he told people, I don't know what you're making so much out of all these one-on-ones for, because there are writers who have been harassing Evan Neal because he's had some sporadic one-on-one victories and losses during practice.
He had one really nice rep against Thibodeau.
He did. Mm-hmm. So some of the folks on the blogs and so forth have been getting on him. Oh, you see, Neil's losing some of these. He's losing balance. He's doing this.
Oh,
he's doing
you
that.
Weren't on when Charlie called me and Lance last week and proclaimed him a draft bust.
Did he? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
All right. So anyway, Feliciano gets up to in front of the media yesterday and he goes, okay, you guys understand he's working on some new techniques at practice during those one-on-ones. So what do you expect? He's trying some new techniques that they're trying to teach him. Well, duh. Of course, then, if he's trying some new techniques and he's trying to learn them, he's going to have some mistakes while he's employing the new techniques. Duh. It's laughable.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I mean, I look at it like this. This is what I like. We're going to see this preseason game. Here's what I'd like to see. On running plays, I want to see our starting offense get a good push. On passing plays, I want to see them create a good pocket. I'd like to see the offense score. I'd like to see us take some hits. I'd like to see a few fumbled balls now so that we can say, okay, let's clean up that technique for the season. And on defense, I'd like to see some push. If you get beat, I want to see you get beat because that guy was better than you, not because of a technique thing. I want to see you – I want to see a couple of I want to see a couple of brain farts from the defense where they screw up the coverage so we can correct it. I want to see the mistakes because that's what it's for, right? Like, practice is for the mistakes. Preseason is for the mistakes. Mm-hmm. So let's just stop blowing up the mistakes and let's just say, okay, cool. I mean, in my life, I'm 42 years old. I've learned way more from my failures than I've ever did from anything I did right off, did well straight off the bat. So, yeah, let's see some mistakes and let's see it get better. Like, this offense isn't going to come in looking like they've been playing together for 16 years. I remember an article in 2007 where Plaxico Burress, who was in that read option with Kevin Gilbert and Eli, said that him and Eli didn't really and truly get completely on the same page to year three of the same offense. These things take time. You know, let's just have some fun and enjoy that football's back. And here's my bold prediction. Giants get into the playoffs.
Good stuff, Stas. Put it on the board.
Thank you, Stas.
All right, man.
Call again. 201-939-4513.
You don't have anything on that? No comments?
Well, he's taking a very rational approach to what he wants to see. Now, whether or not you or I think the Giants will make the playoffs, I think that's probably a little bit of a reach.
I will say this.
They could realistically have a winning record.
If the Giants were in the AFC, I'd say no shot.
Right.
Because AFC is ridiculous.
Yes.
NFC, you get a couple bounces go your way and stuff like that. You sneak in right around 500. Maybe.
You know, people keep asking me out of camp, out by the fence, you know, what do you think? And I tell them, I said, listen, I don't get into my real prediction until right before opening day. But I don't think it's a stretch to look at this 90-man roster, and we've said this on the show before, to think the Giants could get 8 or 9 wins this year. I don't think that is a ridiculous statement to make. There's 5 or 6 non-division games that certainly they should be very ultra-competitive in, and then if you can get 2 or 3 wins in your division, well,
they're
that's
gonna have
8 or 9.
They're going to have to get that high, they're going to have to win all the games but that you think they're supposed to win.
You got to play to the back of your football card. Mm-hmm. You've got to play as well as you're expected to play. You can't have guys getting hurt, and you can't have guys having off seasons. If those things happen, you will sink.
Let's go to Scott in New Mexico. He's up next. Hey, Scott.
Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
Hi.
Paul, I agree with you 100%. In fact, in the very beginning, about a month or so ago, I tried to bet Jeff a golf club that the Giants would win at least 10 games, but you wouldn't let me. So
No. You don't want to do that.
At least 10. Right. That's a lot.
That is a lot. But I will tell you this. The team is better. I think we can unequivocally say the team is better.
I want to see
much,
them. I'm waiting to see them in games, Paul.
And that's fair.
I have not seen them take one snap in even a preseason game yet. I'm not willing to say a damn thing yet.
On paper, which means nothing.
We haven't even seen a co-practice against another team yet.
On paper, which means nothing. I can say that this 90-man roster looks a lot more tasty to me than last year's 90-man roster.
Last year, there were like 8 key injuries, so you hope just with the guys being healthy, they're going to be better. I agree with
exactly.
that, but let's see what this injury list looks like when we get to September
11th. Oh, I know.
11th.
I know.
You know what I mean? September 12th.
I know.
I think as far as Wink Martindale, I don't think anybody has anything to worry about. It was a game in 2019. He sent 5 rushers on 27 of 45 dropbacks against Buffalo, and they allowed 8 yards, 4 sacks, and 1 takeaway. And so I think he's going to manifest the same kind of defense, so I'm not worried about that. I always thought from the beginning, Wink Martindale was really an upgrade.
Scott, remember, you need the talent. It doesn't matter what the scheme is. Look what Wink Martindale's defense did last year when they lost their top 3 cornerbacks. It was
right.
a nightmare.
No, I agree with you. It's going to depend on injury and all of that,
right.
but... And that was one of the questions I had. I don't know if you know the status of Nick Gates or Dane Belton, because I like both of them.
Belton's going to be a little while. Belton's going to be a little bit wild.
Gates, too.
And Shane did kind of reference, maybe he'll be off pup by the time the regular season comes along, but we'll see.
You got to think the season will start without Nick Gates. You can't think he's going to be there week one. You can't.
Do you think he'll play is really what I was going to ask.
I think there's a realistic chance he'll be activated before the season is over.
I agree.
And that's as far as I'm
now,
going to go.
Now, will he play over John Feliciano? Probably not, unless
right.
something's gone wrong.
Right.
But yes, I agree. I believe he will be an active player on the 53 or he will be eligible to be active on the 53-man roster at some point this season.
I believe that.
Okay. My main question, it's the only one I have, is this. I know everybody's been beating Daniel over the head, and thinking Tyrod Taylor is eventually going to take over, which I think is a lot of bunk. But Tyrod Taylor's played in 70 games in 10 years. I think he has 58 touchdowns and 25 interceptions, so I don't see that. I think he's a good fill-in, but he's not Daniel Jones.
Want me to count how many touchdowns Daniel Jones has in his games he's played?
Scott, I was just going to say, to be fair, Scott, Tyrod Taylor, did a great job of getting Buffalo into the playoffs some years ago
right.
when they ended their drought.
To
be fair to him, and I think it's important, he's thrown the ball very well during this offseason. He does have some mobility. And to be frank, the number one reason why he's been unable to hold the starting job consistently has been injuries.
Yes, and again, that was not me
right.
taking a shot at Daniel. It was just pointing out that
Goose right.
using that stat as the stat isn't
right.
indicative of how good the quarterback
is. I concur.
That
right.
was the point
I agree.
I was making.
Okay. My question to you both. Everyone is sort of saying Daniel Jones is the key to the offense. I think the opposite. I think Saquon Barkley is the key
Scott,
to the offense.
I hate to tell you this. You can pick any NFL team on this planet right now. The key to their offense is their quarterback.
Okay, but I think there are quarterbacks, for example, we're going to be playing Tennessee. Ryan Tannehill is an average, to me, a good quarterback, not a great one.
That's fine.
But the strength of the team is obviously Derrick Henry.
I understand, but if you take Ryan Tannehill off the team and you put some scrub in there, guess what? You're going to put 9 men in the box
sure.
against Derrick Henry,
no,
and he's not going to gain any yards.
Let's put it this
right.
way. How did it go after Jones got hurt last year and Mike Glennon took over?
That is, Paul,
correct.
Thank you. That is, that could not have been put better. That could not, and that
right.
could not have been put better. Thank you.
But I'm going to situations like, for example, I think the leading receiver last year was Evan Ingram, I think,
right.
with 46.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I think Saquon Barkley had 41.
How many points?
They can't have that.
Yeah. Well,
they can't have that statistic.
Well, yeah, but Scott, that's the point. They didn't score any points last year.
Scott,
if
here,
you want to
right.
score points,
here,
you need the quarterback
exactly.
to be
here's where we got to deal with some semantics, Scott, because I think you're right that the offense runs through Barkley. Much like you used to talk about in basketball, the offense ran through Patrick Ewing with the Knicks. The offense
correct.
Will run through Barkley, but Daniel Jones has to have a good year for the Giants to do well. So I agree with John, but I also agree with you that the offense still will run through Barkley. He'll get the most combined touches of anybody.
For example, Scott, and this is how I'll put it to you. I joke with everybody when it comes, and Paul loves talking fantasy football, so he'll love this comment. when you're drafting running backs in fantasy football, the first thing you look at, who's the quarterback with that running back?
Right.
Because if the team does not have a quarterback, teams will just load up against the running back, and you can stop a running game if you've put enough guys up there. You can do it. And if you're on a bad team, you get behind in games because you have a bad quarterback, then you can't run it anymore because you're playing from behind. So the most important thing to a good running back is having a good quarterback that the other team has to respect, and that will keep you in games.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was my question. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Okay.
And having a good offensive line doesn't hurt either.
No, it does not hurt at all.
That is also a very important part of that equation.
But that's not part of fantasy football, so nobody in fantasy cares.
No, well, I mean, you analyze the offensive lines when you draft your guys.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah, sure you do. Well, the people that want to win do.
Yeah. I don't play fantasy.
Oh, man. 201-939-4513.
Did you see Belichick's answer to that child?
I didn't. You know what? It's funny. I think I read a quote, but it seemed very out of context to me. I didn't know what the deal was, but yeah, please give it to me.
There was a youngster who apparently asked Bill Belichick at a press conference.
Like, when you say youngster, are you talking like teenager, or are you talking like...
Pearson, how old was he?
Teenager, I'm assuming.
Okay. Was he a teenager?
Oh, so it was kind of like a kid reporter.
Yeah, like a young reporter. Yeah.
Okay, I got it.
Yeah, and asked...
I'm just happy Pearson's done giggling over there.
Asked Bill Belichick. Let me see. Here's the question, okay? He goes, "We're obsessed with fantasy football. Even though we know you don't play, do you think it's good or bad for the NFL?"
Well, you know what? That's actually an interesting question to ask Bill
Belichick. It is. From a marketing perspective, it's a very interesting question. Huh? From a business perspective and from a Q factor perspective, it's an absolutely good question.
Remember, the more money the NFL makes, the bigger Bill Belichick's contract gets.
So Belichick decides he's going to answer it straightforward as a football question.
Shocking.
And he says, honestly, I don't really have any opinion on that. Fantasy football doesn't mean anything to me. We're just trying to win games out here. So I don't know who's hot, who's not, who wins, who doesn't. I don't care about that. I just care about whether we win. So have fun with that.
That was your Bill Belichick impression?
I got nothing else. I'm sorry.
That was weak.
I'm sorry. I got nothing else. But, you know, and he smiled at the end of the answer. He smiled so as not to offend the youngster. But, you know, and that's how I feel. I'm sorry. That's
fine. I got you.
I'm on the same page as Bill. Anyway. We got a few minutes left. I'm glad.
I'm going to take Cliff in New York. He's
okay,
up next.
Do
hey,
it.
Cliff, how are you? Go ahead, Cliff.
Hey, hi, guys. How you doing?
What's going
on?
Hi.
Yeah, great stuff today, as usual. I loved hearing that Feliciano had something to say at the press conference. I hope they all do that. You know, I hate to have these guys think, well, they got to tune everything out, you know, and they got to shut out the noise, yada, yada. You know, I'm delighted that they have time or an inclination to speak up once in a while and teach somebody something, and maybe it'll get through because, you know, I mean, the fan base might as well get better too, right?
I get the impression that Feliciano has really good leadership skills, and I think that's one of the reasons why the Bills folks brought him here.
Yeah, that's why I picked him for MVP when you were looking for MVP nominees. You know, if he can lead putting together the line the way they imagined it when they signed all those guys and the draft.
I'll tell you what, if he better be a really good center if he's going to win the offensive MVP. But I totally understand what you're saying.
Cliff, I will say this to you as a side note. It was him who went after Tay Crowder after the third play of abrasiveness today, much like Nick Gates would always go after somebody if they went after one of his teammates during a game.
Nick Gates has done that before. You're
okay.
Richie Seibert and Chris Neal are also the same.
Same type of guys who would foam at the mouth, and you better not fuss with my guys. And Feliciano showed that today. He's got that pit bull dog in him.
I like it. I also like what I heard about the line. There was a practice recently, I forget which one, where the guys were talking about what it was like in the trenches during the practice that they were banging around, and it just struck me as like, if we can really get the trenches going, then we'll have a winning record. Isn't that what it really comes down to? On both sides of the ball,
it always starts there.
We have plenty of talent, huh?
Yeah, it always starts in the trenches. We know that. And you know what?
Yeah, well, we haven't had it. You know, we're going to attack the quarterback and everything. I'm feeling better about the defensive line. I think we're going to have one, even though it's going to look a little different. I'm listening to these predictions. You know, I've been inclined to have the same feeling about, you know, the winning record and stuff. And I really, I'm kind of with John. I have to wait a little bit longer. I don't even know who the 53 is going to be. I definitely feel a lot better, and I'm feeling good about where we're at. And I'm wondering if it's because they're actually more coordinated and communicating better than the last year at this time. For example, there were no less than 6 backup quarterback candidates at this time last year, and that struck me as funny, and it turned out to be a bad omen. You know, I just wonder if everybody's on the same page more and they're more together. I mean, you guys are close enough to feel if there's any difference in that regard.
Yeah, Cliff, and thanks for the call. Look, I do think that there's really good synergy between the front office and the coach, 100%. But look, I think at this time of year, this is the season of hope, right? If you can't feel good and have hope and feel good about your team on August 8th, it's going to be a rough year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is when everyone starts feeling good about their team. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
This is when people start feeling good about them. So, look, I would. I'm not sure what Vegas has them as, but I would have the over-under at around 7 or so games, give or take. That's where I would put the over-under this year.
I believe that's what the Vegas folks are saying. Yeah. 7.
I remember we talked about that when we talked about the Washington Commanders and them on another
right.
show. They're around the same number. I mean, that's where I would put it. And I think, you know, if things go really well, you win a bunch of – remember, these records at the end of the day – is going to depend on whether or not you win your close games, right? You know, I always assume when I do my, you know, well, what should their record have been? I just assume you any games that are decided by one score, you win half, you lose half, and then you figure out where you're at after that. But if the Giants happen to have one of those years where they go 6-2 in or like 8-2 in close games or 8-4 in close games, well, you know what? Then they could win 8, 9, 10 games. If it's a year where they go 3-5 in close games, well, then they might only win 5 or 6 games this year. It all depends on how you do those, win those close games, and that can come down to Mr. May field goals. It can come down to a bounce of the ball. It can come down to a coaching decision. It can come down to a two-point conversion, a penalty, exactly. All these little minuscule things that swing close games one way or the other, that's what's going to determine what the record is. So, again, I would not obsess myself with the record this year, folks. This is still a first year of a new regime, where they're trying to put their program in place, bring their players in, build their roster. They want to build it, and it's the first step in a long process. So if they happen to play above expectations and win a lot of games, great. I'll be thrilled to cover a team that wins 9 or 10 games. I'll be ecstatic. It'll be great. Love every minute of it. I'd much rather be flying home from Seattle at like 1 o'clock in the morning on October 30th after a 20-17 win than a 23-20 loss. So let's go win as many games as the Giants possibly can. But look, to me, this is not about the wins and losses. When I leave this year, this is my question, all right? Do I feel really good about my 2 offensive tackles? Do I feel really good about my 2 edge rushers? Do I feel really good about my wide receiver core? And how do I feel about my quarterback? And my corners. That's what I'm asking.
And your pass rush.
Well, I said edge players.
That's fair.
I already feel good about Leonard and Dexter. I'm not worried about that.
That's fair.
But do I feel good about Thibodeau? Do I feel good about Ellerson Smith? Do I feel good about Ojulari? Do I feel good about Darnay Holmes? Do I feel good about Aaron Robinson? Mm-hmm. Do I feel good about Julian Love? Do I feel good about Evan Neal? Do I feel good about Andrew Thomas? And all these, you know, what does Kadarius Toney do? What does Wendell Robinson do? What does Galladay do? Like, and Saquon, of course. Like, how do I feel about these individual players when the year is over so I know, you know, you talk about trying to build a skyscraper, right? Well, how many floors are already done, Paul? Do we have 5 floors done? Do we have 10 floors done? Or do we have like 2 floors done? I don't know how many floors are done.
No.
I want to have that skyscraper as tall as it can be at the end of the year. And I'd rather have 2 fewer wins and have the skyscraper be 5 or 10 levels mm-hmm. higher than squeak out 9 wins, but oh no, I've only have 5 floors built on my 100-story skyscraper. And then I have too much work to do. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it.
Yeah, ultimately, it goes back to something Lance talks about all the time, and he says it's not necessarily about the rookie class, but how are the second and third year players going to play?
All the guys on rookie contracts.
And you mentioned mm-hmm. a whole ton of them just now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's the future of this organization.
And I, by the way, I only didn't mention McKinney because I already feel pretty good about him. I'm not worried.
So now if that cluster of players all plays well and shows ups, this team will be good for the next 3 to 4 years.
Right.
And you won't just be a 1 year, okay, we were decent around 500, and then the next year we fall off a cliff again.
As long as you figure out the quarterback.
Yes.
Which is the most important
thing. No question.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, John.
Don't forget, folks, Giants suites are available. Giants.com/suites, 888-NYG-1925. Giants games, but also concerts, all that sort of stuff. You get full season locations or individual games. Check it out, Giants.com/suites. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. Tomorrow it will be Lance. It'll be Fiegels and Dottino tomorrow. We will not be live because we'll be traveling. Oh, no, tomorrow's Tuesday, right?
Tomorrow's Tuesday.
I keep thinking today's Tuesday.
I know.
Because yesterday we were here on a Sunday, and it makes it feel like that
Monday.
Was a Monday and this
I
is a
thought
Tuesday.
The same thing.
Let me try that again.
Yes, sir.
Tomorrow it will be Lance and I doing the show. Wednesday, it'll be Dottino and Fiegels, but it'll be a tape show because we'll be on our way to New England to take on the Patriots on Thursday. Then on Thursday, I'm trying to get Fiegels to do the show at Lance because clearly I can't do it because I will be preparing for a game at Foxborough.
Yes.
So check that out. Then we're back on Friday, 2 o'clock all week long, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Thank you, Pearson. Thank you, Paul. I'm Schmelk. We'll see you next time.